Welcome to the business podcast of the American Chamber of Commerce in Australia. AmCham business podcasts are hosted by Dr. Duff Watkins. Duff is a director of Exec Search International, an author, and is also on the AmCham Council of Governors. AmCham, bringing business to you.
Hello and welcome to the business podcast at the American Chamber of Commerce in Australia, AmCham, bringing business to you. Today we're going to give you a blueprint for innovation. And by the way, innovation, it's not what you think it is. My name's Duff Watkins. I'm the host on the AmCham Business Podcast. And today our guest is Mike Irossi, Managing Director of Redshift Consulting, an innovation consultancy. Today you will hear the difference between continuous improvement and innovation. You'll hear why you need an operational definition of innovation, and you'll discover why innovation may be the last thing you and your company need. Mike, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks, Steph.
First thing, let me ask you, tell me more about Redshift Consulting. I've never heard of an innovation consultancy, so what do you folks do?
You know, nowadays it's all about innovation for us. It wasn't always like that. You know, when we started several years ago, we focused almost exclusively on continuous improvement. You know, we've never had a big sort of strategy offering other than forecasting technology trends and things like that. Instead, we were always the group that went into the business and did the heavy lifting to implement strategic initiatives. So all of our consultants are Lean Six Sigma certified. And there was always a big emphasis for us on process excellence and waste reduction. But it's kind of a funny story, actually, that gets us up to where we are now. My first few sort of years as a consultant, there seemed to be this motif in business improvement, and it didn't really matter which consultancy we were looking at. All the approaches were very similar. So most managers and executives will know what I'm talking about straight away when I give this story. But if you've ever worked with an internal consultant or an external consultant to drive continuous improvement, you get this situation where the consultant will bring all of the SMEs into a room, and they'll do a brainstorming session. And that brainstorming session is meant to basically uncover sort of the root causes of some problem that you're trying to solve. You go through the process mapping and things like that. And then usually that's backed up with data. Not always, but usually it's backed up with data. And then what happens is, you know, 2 weeks go by or maybe a month goes by, and then the consultants will bring those SMEs back into the room, and then they'll ask the SMEs to come up with the solutions for the problems that they just generated. So it's kind of a strange situation in that way. You're trying to pick the heads and you're kind of trying to go through the minds of the individuals within your team. But it's very, very much subjected to the psychological inertia of the individual. So in a way, you could say that our company specializing in innovation was based largely on the opportunity that was created through sort of that opportunity or that gap within management consulting. But it was also in response to what clients were looking to achieve in the way of greater growth expectations. So over the span of a few years, I would say that Redshift metamorphosed into a consultancy that was very much focused on root cause analysis and very much focused on innovation. So I guess our approach was really just born out of what was happening in the market around us. So now as a result, our root cause analysis tools offer sophisticated modeling, we've got predictive analysis, and we have some really incredibly powerful algorithms for solving some of the most difficult challenges in business today. So it's effectively, this is what we do for our clients. We help them go after their biggest problems. We help them go after problems that are quite long-standing within the organization. We try to tackle the stuff that's really frustrating for them, and we try to do that in the shortest amount of time possible. And the big thing for us is we don't use a lot of trial and error attempts. So it's quite important for us to follow that algorithm so that we cut the amount of time down for the solution gen. At the end of the day, for us, you know, innovation is all about market impact. So when we generate solutions, those solutions have to be either creating new markets or they have to be disrupting existing markets. You know, what we do is quite fun. I mean, it's really exciting. You know, it feels good to be creative. You get this amazing feeling when you're able to spend, you know, an hour or an hour and a half with a company and to crack a problem that they've maybe had for the last 20 years. You know, so it's incredibly rewarding for us.
Are you actually cultivating the in-house ability to innovate within the company?
It depends on what the organization is trying to achieve. So Clayton Christensen talks about this a lot in his work, The Innovator's Dilemma.
And he, that's the founder of the word disruption, by the way.
Yes. And so he talks a lot about the cultural impact and the impact that culture has on vetting solutions and vetting decision making around innovation. So I guess to answer that question, you know, when we come in, it depends what they want to do. If they want to embed an innovation capability, yeah, by all means, we can give them that framework and we can work with them on giving their managers and their teams the skills and the framework for thinking out of the box and overcoming psychological inertia. But if it's a short, sharp piece of work, then a lot of times we'll just come in and we'll just knock out some solutions for them and overcome that problem.
We were joking before we went to air, Mike, about if you ask 100 people what innovation is, you'll get 100 different answers. And it's become, the word's part of jargon now, it's become part of the landscape. So let me ask you, you'll be the 101st person. What does innovation mean to you?
I'm going to look at innovation with a very critical lens. I mean, for me, when you're an innovation consultant, your business ultimately and the success of your organization relies on your ability to generate innovative outcomes and your ability to impact the market. So for me, having a very robust framework for innovation is critically important. Innovation to me, basically, I look at two different dimensions. I look at a dimension where we consider things like novelty, which, you know, a lot of people will think of novelty and they think about, you know, newness and things like that. So I look at a 5-point solution hierarchy for that. But then I also consider the impact on the market. So we look at the evolution of the product or the service and whether or not that change is either disrupting an existing market or maybe creating new markets. But then the most important thing for me with respect to how I define innovation is this idea of diffusion. And I want to know, if you're going to make a change, you're going to make an improvement to a product or a service or a technology or something like that, I want to know where in the world we're seeing the introduction of that change or that improvement. So I look at it from along three dimensions. I look at it from the question of is it coming into the world at a global level? Is it coming into the world at an industry level? Or are you launching it at an industry level? Or are we seeing it just at a firm level? And what I say is that in order for something to be considered innovation, it really has to be either being introduced at a global level or at an industry level, if that makes sense.
I'm intrigued by your comment. Innovation is about market impact. In other words, we're not just doing this for fun, just for the heck of it. It actually has a business result orientated. Most businesses would like to be making or think they're making these incremental changes and bit by bit, day by day, gaining ground. But you're saying that's not innovation.
Yeah, exactly. I guess there's a couple things there. This idea of incremental change is probably very much linked to, you can think of Lean Six Sigma or just continuous improvement type activities. They're designed to make incremental improvements. And an incremental improvement is basically where you're making some sort of small qualitative or quantitative improvement to a product or service. So example, if you had memory capacity or something like that, you know, you're just slowly ratcheting up the memory capacity. Or if you're looking at speed or miles per hour, you're going from 10 to 15 to 20, et cetera. That's incremental change. Now, the problem with incremental change is that it's not going to have a very disruptive effect on the market. It's not going to move the market. And it's definitely not going to create new markets for you. So a lot of what I say about incremental change is fine for continuous improvement. But when we start talking about innovation, we really have to differentiate between what incremental change is and what innovation is. And innovation is going to start making radical leaps in your performance. It's going to start making radical jumps on the mainstream market S-curve. And then at the same time, it might actually create new S-curves and create new markets. And that's where you get the real disruption that Clayton Christensen was talking about, is if you want to disrupt a mainstream market, you can do it one of two ways. You can make a radical leap, or you can basically jump onto a new S-curve, as a good example.
You mentioned the word diffusion a couple times. Now, I'm not familiar with that. I mean, I know what the word means, but not in the context of innovation.
Sure.
Can you elaborate?
Yeah, sure. So the way that we use diffusion in the context of the innovation spectrum is basically this idea that you should be able to take any change or any improvement that you want to make. And the first question that you should ask is, where am I going to see this introduction into the world? And so we use three levels here. And I kind of started mentioning this before, but you have this idea that there's a global level, there's an industry level, and there's a firm level. So when we talk about diffusion at the global level, what it means is that it's literally the first time that you're introducing a change or an improvement to the world. That's why it's the global level. If you think of the example of X-ray technology, the first time that X-ray technology was discovered, that's global diffusion, right? Now, if X-ray technology is then used in the medical industry, and it's used for the very first time in the medical industry, then you could say that that's an industry-level diffusion. Now, you could take another example of an industry-level diffusion and say, the first time X-ray technology is used in construction, maybe it's used for non-destructive testing or something like that, that's also industry-level diffusion. You could go on to even look at aviation industry and security screening and X-ray technology and things like that. But the idea is that whenever you're asking the question, is this the first time that we're seeing this in either the world, so global level, or in an industry, those two qualifiers allow you to basically make the determination that the change or the improvement that you're introducing is innovation. I guess where this starts to get kind of muddied and where we see this more than anything else or anyplace else is at firm level diffusion. And this is happening all the time. I cannot tell you how many meetings or how many workshops I go to where I hear about firm level diffusion and firm level diffusion is referred to as innovation. So let me give you an example of firm level diffusion. Firm level diffusion is where one of your competitors in the industry is already using a process or they're already using a technology or they've already made a similar iteration to their product or service. If you are just plugging in what your competitors are doing, that's firm level diffusion and it's not innovation. It's just continuous improvement. And so I think if managers and executives started thinking along those lines, they would immediately stop referring to changes that are being made within their organization that their competitors already have as innovation, because it's not innovation. And I think it helps allow you to focus your sights on things that really are going to be impactful and really are going to make a change in the market, because it's not necessarily firm level diffusion.
And so this diffusion that you're talking about occurs on three levels: firm, industry, and global level. And it's all about having a market impact. So real innovation has market impact. Is that a fair way of saying
absolutely.
It?
Absolutely.
Okay. Okay, so how do we go about identifying diffusion?
It really starts with asking the question. Most executives, especially most change agents, if you've been in an industry, you can take the telco or the financial services industry. If you've been in an industry for a few years, usually you know what your competitors are doing, especially with respect to products and services, because they're telling the market, right? They want their customer base to know, we've just come up with XYZ, we've just made this change to our product. So most of the time when you're talking about industry-level diffusion or firm-level diffusion for products and services, it's in the market. It's readily available. All you have to do is a bit of market research on your competitors' products or services. Where it gets a little bit more complicated is around things like technologies and processes, because those are internal to an organization. So it's harder for us to have insight into our competitors. But at the same time, you know, especially here in the Australian market, it's not a big place. Well, I mean, Australia is a huge place, right? But when you compare it to, say, the US or something like that, it's actually not a big place. And so what you see is executives will typically move around within an industry, and there's only, you know, a handful of places that they can go.
Yeah.
So if you talk to your teams and you say, you get four or five people in a room and you say, listen, you were at such and such competitor, you were at such and such competitor, and you have them do a download of the technologies and the processes that exist within their competitors, you can build a pretty good landscape or view of the industry and, again, the firm level types of implementations that these companies have made. And so, again, you start getting that picture. So I say that the best thing to do if you want to start looking at diffusion is initially start with the market. That's going to give you a pretty good picture of the products and services. But then you need to just actually ask your staff. You need to go through your teams and really try to leverage the knowledge and the experience that they have in working with competitors. Otherwise, you can also go and you can do a patent search, you can do IP search, things like that. So there's ways to get a hold of the information. But I think it's just more about being aware of the fact that you want to find out whether or not the changes you're making are already out there, are already in the market, because it's going to have a big impact on the efficacy of your product. And again, it comes back to what's happening on that S-curve and what's happening with the market and the pull of market share.
You're listening to the AmCham Business Podcast, and today we're discussing innovation with Mike Irossi. AmCham is, by the way, the oldest, largest, most prestigious chamber of commerce in Australia. It's 55 years old and going strong. And if you're not a member, well, you need to innovate. You need to join. Now back to Mike. Now, Mike, tell me, we're talking more about this innovation. Now, or what ingredients do I need to innovate intelligently or efficiently, be it in my firm or industry?
I guess it sort of starts like this, and I've asked 100 people this question. If you ask somebody, where does the solution come from? You're trying to solve a problem. And let's say you can get the landscape of that problem. And you ask, where does the solution come from? If you ask most people, well, they're going to say, oh, well, it comes from my head. You know, if you have 10 people in a room, they're going to generate that idea. Well, the problem with that is that if you have people that are in that room and they've been in the same industry for several years, well, they're subject to that psychological inertia where on the one hand, it's good because they have a lot of industry experience. But on the other hand, it's bad because their knowledge and their experience is only within that industry. So, for instance, if I said that a company's trying to solve a problem, but the solution for that problem has already been created or has already been identified, but within another industry, say you're trying to solve a problem in telecommunications. Well, if the solution to your problem already exists in forestry, it doesn't matter how many telco SMEs you're going to put into a room. They're just not going to come up with the answer, right? And you're dealing with that psychological inertia and you're dealing with the minds of the individuals. So part of what I say is I say, look, you need to get away from trial and error attempts. You know, we don't have time in this busy world to sit and go through 100 trials of a solution to find out whether or not it works and how well it works, right? We have to start thinking a bit smarter. So we have to start looking at things like algorithms. We have to start thinking about whether or not this problem has already been solved in another industry. And I think, you know, patent searches are a great example of that. Because again, you can find out that the structure of your solution already exists, but exists within another industry. And that's where I start talking about methodologies like TRIZ. TRIZ is a methodology that basically helps you identify, one, the problem structure, but then two, a solution structure that you need to overcome that problem. So in that case, you're not gonna spend the time of an SME group to go through 100 trials to come up with a solution for the problem. First, you're gonna go out and you're gonna do some research. And you're gonna say, look, has this problem ever been solved before? Or has this structure ever been used before to solve this problem? And once you tap into that, what you find is that you reduce the time it takes to come up with solutions, you know, by tenfold. And at the same time, the quality of the solution that you get, and I talk about solutions in terms of levels. So I talk about a 5-point hierarchy for solutions. So the quality and the level of the solution that you get is much, much higher than it would be if you look outside of the industry and you look, or potentially look outside of the industry, but you look at the structure of the problem and the structure of the solution, and you tap into that rather than just doing trial and error brainstorming activities. And so again, you're trying to get above and beyond things like qualitative and quantitative improvements. You want to start looking at discoveries and applications of discoveries in a new way to solve your problem.
Going on from that, so like changes occur in companies and industries all the time,
yes.
But change is not the same as innovation. So one of the ways that I can recognize a true innovation is it somehow diffused from where it originated to, is it being picked up?
Yes.
By other companies or other industries or other, is it having impact?
When you're asking the diffusion question, you're more asking from your perspective, does it already exist? Like if you're launching a solution or you're making a change, you're asking, does that change already exist in our industry? And so that's how you're trying to gauge the level of diffusion. Because if it does exist in your industry, then what you have is incremental improvement, or you have some sort of continuous improvement or something like best practice. So in that case, you're not looking for validation from the market to tell you whether or not it's being accepted at an industry or a global level. You're actually looking at whether or not that change or that improvement already exists.
All right, let me ask you a question. I have to go to Dictionary Online to sort this out. What is the difference between innovation and invention?
This actually kind of takes us into the patent research area as well. But the difference between invention and innovation, well, if you think about invention, the definition for invention is out there. It's not being disputed. You know, we understand what an invention is. You know, we understand what a patent is, right? It's a very specific solution to a very specific problem. But when we get into the area of innovation, you know, this is where we've got sort of an open field here. And this is part of the problem. This is why we have, you know, ambiguity at full gallop. There's no consensus around the definition for innovation. But the difference between innovation and invention is that you can come up with a solution to a problem, you can patent it, you can register it. But the idea is that if that invention sits on a shelf somewhere, well, and there's no market impact, well, that's never going to, you know, hit the market. It's never going to see the light of day. There's no innovation impact there. So at the moment where an invention hits the market and it starts being adopted within the market, that is now innovation. So the real difference between invention and innovation is that you have to have some level of market adoption. And this is pretty important because if we do a patent search in an organization and we find out that they've registered 1,000 patents, what you'll find is that this takes us to the Pareto principle, right? 80-20 rule. The majority of patents that are normally registered don't have any value. They're not defended. And so the idea is, again, are you wanting to register inventions? Are you wanting to pursue inventions that aren't going to impact the market? Probably not. You know, the solutions that you're coming up with, the changes that you're making, you want those changes to be innovative. You want those changes to link back to the market and to either give you, you know, increased market share or disrupt an existing market or even create a new market for you. That's the real difference between an invention and an innovation.
One of the things I'm learning from you today, Michael, a lot of things actually, but if I understand you correctly, innovation is a process and it involves... can involve algorithms which reduce the time required to innovate successfully. And there are some distinct processes, some distinct do's and don'ts, some things to avoid, some things to do. I'd like you to elaborate on that, but is my understanding correct so far?
Yeah. Again, so the normal approach to coming up with solution or solution gens is just trial and error. And it's this bottom-up, it's this inductive approach where you're just generating as many ideas as you can. You will see this, I promise you, you will see this again and again and again. People will bring SMEs into a room and they will just say, let's brainstorm. And they'll come up with 10 different ways of brainstorming, but it's brainstorming. And that is ineffective. It is suboptimal in terms of coming up with solutions to a problem. So, you know, one of the things I mentioned was that algorithm. There's a really powerful algorithm. And again, this comes from TRIZ, which is T-I-R-Z.
I'm not familiar with that. TRIZ.
TRIZ, yeah. So... There are different methodologies out there. You know, most people are familiar with Lean Six Sigma as a methodology or theory of constraints. There are different methodologies out there. TRIZ is a methodology. Well, let me just explain the acronym. So that acronym is actually a Russian acronym. So it's not
No wonder I don't know. I don't speak Russian.
But TRIZ, it stands for Theory of Inventive Problem Solving. And so basically what you have is you have a methodology that is ultimately built around coming up with creative solutions to problems. That's the entire methodology. And it's been around since the mid-1940s. It was come up with by a gentleman by the name of Heinrich Altschuler and his team. He actually worked in the patent office. And one of the things he did was he was looking at patents. And again, a patent is a solution to a problem. And he was looking at patents. And what he found was that he was seeing this sort of recurring theme, this pattern, right? There was patterns that were being used to solve certain types of problems or certain structures of problems. And so the idea with TRIZ is basically it's trying to give you a very efficient way of solving a problem. And in TRIZ, they talk a lot about contradictions and they talk about overcoming contradictions. A business contradiction is basically where you're trying to accomplish two opposing things at once. As far as TRIZ is concerned, it tries to overcome contradictions and it's very big in as far as it doesn't want you to make trade-offs and it doesn't want you to make compromises. And this is what we're really good at doing in business. As soon as something gets difficult or it gets expensive, we start looking at making trade-offs. So TRIZ says, look, we want you to come up with a solution to a problem. We don't want you to make any trade-offs. We don't want you to make any compromises. And we want you to be very, very efficient and very effective in the way that you generate solutions. And so that idea of an algorithm that I started kind of getting into, there's a really good algorithm that comes out of TRIZ, which is the algorithm is called ARIZ, and it's A-R-I-Z. It's the algorithm of inventive problem solving. Again, it's another Russian acronym. But there it literally goes step by step, and it has you go through really detailed problem decomposition. And once you decompose the problem in a certain way, you get the structures of the problem at different points in time and at different locations. And then that's where you can apply solution structures and solution patterns to solve that problem. So in terms of an algorithm, you know, this is where I talk about don't use brainstorming. Get yourself a structure. Get an approach that is guaranteed to get you the results that you want. And not just to the simple problems, but to the really hard stuff, to the hard problems that most organizations struggle with. And I highly recommend, if you're not familiar with TRIZ, I highly recommend, you know, check out TRIZ, check out the Theory of Inventive Problem Solving. Have a look at the ARIZ algorithm. It's absolutely profound. It's very powerful.
And is that what you and Redshift Consulting use in the course of dealing with your clients?
Yeah, ARIS is definitely something that we use. We have our own sort of proprietary approach, which we have our framework. We go through, each phase has a specific set of tools that we use, and different tools tackle different levels of problems and different types of complexities. And then we've got our own dashboards and our own metrics and things like that. So we have a proprietary approach, but for our clients that have worked with us, if you look at a TRIZ, you look at the foundations of TRIZ, you can see that much of what we do comes from TRIZ. But at the same time, we also use structures of Lean Six Sigma. So we've got a very effective, very powerful hybrid that we use. Within that, we also leverage our own algorithms in addition to the ones that come out of TRIZ.
So I guess the point is you have a distinct road-tested process by which innovation is advanced significantly and rapidly.
Yeah.
Within, which is the whole point.
Yeah, exactly.
As we conclude here today, I'm wondering, Mike, what sort of things might you say to our listeners? What sort of takeaway would you leave with them so that they could think differently, think better about innovation?
Yeah, I think there's probably a few things. Look, just start thinking about the fact that continuous improvement and innovation are different. And it's okay that they're different because they're meant to achieve different things. Okay. Innovation isn't a replacement for continuous improvement. We still need continuous improvement. We still have to improve our existing processes. We still need to focus on business excellence. But then at the same time, you need to be clear on whether or not what you need is innovation. So start making that differentiation. And then the other thing is, if you don't use the framework for innovation that I've talked about here today, and you don't use this operational definition, I strongly encourage you to come up with your own operational definition for innovation within your organization. You'll find it's a pretty complex process, but just get some definition in place, because ultimately the middle management layer, the layer that's vetting the solutions before they make it to the Steerco or the Exco, they're gonna make those decisions. And if you give them the guiding principles and you give them the alignment and the thinking as to what you or how you determine innovation or what you think innovation is, they'll be much better equipped to make sure that the solutions that are finding their way up to the Steerco are actually innovative ideas and innovative changes rather than just continuous improvement. And then also I would say make sure you're clear on your strategic direction. Get clear on whether or not you do need to make incremental changes in your products and service, or get clear on whether you're actually trying to pursue things like radical jumps in performance and things like that. I guess the big takeaway for me is that if you don't do anything else other than start using diffusion, you will be so much better off. Again, you're going to hear the word innovation in workshops, you're going to hear it in meetings, you're going to hear it on TV, you're going to hear it in ads, you're going to hear it everywhere. If you apply that framework of diffusion literally today, and all you need to do is just ask the question, is it globally diffused? Is it industry level diffused? Is it firm level diffused? You will be able to quickly and easily cut out the things that are innovation or non-innovation from those that are innovation. That if you only did one thing and you only got one thing from this podcast, I would hope that it's that. Start using that framework for diffusion. Again, global, industry, and then firm.
You've been listening to the Business Podcast of the American Chamber of Commerce in Australia. And our guest today has been Mike Irossi, Managing Director of Redshift Consulting and Innovation Consultancy. We value your opinion. If you're listening to us through iTunes, you can easily hit the subscribe button, leave a review, make a comment, all of which are very appreciated, because we want to know what you want to know. What are the topics, the people, the issues that are of interest to you? Just email us, podcast@amcham.com.au. In fact, you can hear all the podcasts on the website, amcham.com.au. This is AmCham, bringing business to you. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to the Business Podcast of the American Chamber of Commerce in Australia. AmCham has an extensive list of live events throughout Australia. To learn more about our event program and learn how you can access even more opportunities through membership, please visit our website at amcham.com.au. AmCham, bringing business to you.
Hi, this is Duff Watkins. I'm a governor of the American Chamber of Commerce in Australia. People ask me, what are the benefits of joining AmCham? Well, it comes down to this. Nothing gets bought or sold until you deal with another person. You have to meet people in business. Business is all about trust and interaction. Best place I know to meet people, business people, your kind of people, customers, potential customers, is at AmCham. That's why I've been a member for 27 years. You can find out more about AmCham on the website, amcham.com.au.